Just heard music from a set of very distinctive voices, such that an introduction might not necessarily have been called for, but for some of you who maybe walked in and didn't quite get the full context for it, we'll run through all of it right now. You're listening on Monday night, December the 25th of 2023, to some sounds from the Carnegie Hall event called From Spirituals to Swing in 1938. This is on WICN right now, 90.5 and WICN.org. My name is Ben Young, and we'll be listening to the From Spirituals to Swing concert recordings from now until midnight tonight. In that sequence, we heard a total of four focal performers. They were vocal performers, and they were also the focus of attention within their set. Joe Turner was one of the blues singers called to the stage for this concert event, and he gave us two pieces of music. They were by name Low Down Dog and It's All Right Baby, in both cases with Mr. Johnson, Pete Johnson, on piano in support. The story that John Hammond tells was that Joe Turner was handed the microphone that was being used to amplify voices, including Hammond's, who was the announcer for the concert. He actually was deputizing in that regard. The person they wanted for the job couldn't make it. So he hands the mic off to Joe Turner, who sort of swatted the mic away and did what any opera singer would do and what Joe Turner would do to let his voice acoustically fill up Carnegie Hall. And it was sufficient to the task, as I'm sure the recording carries out to our ears in 2023. After that, you heard Big Bill as he was listed in the program. That's Big Bill Brunzi playing guitar and singing. And after Brunzi, you heard Jimmy Rushing singing his own style along with the Count Basie Orchestra. And I should point out that before all that, before Steel and Blues by Jimmy Rushing and Brunzi doing his piece and Joe Turner doing his two pieces, you heard Sonny Terry doing the Fox Chase on with his harmonica and voice. Sonny Terry was sort of, I guess, the last person fixed into the program for this December 23rd, 1938 concert. I mentioned that this was at Carnegie Hall, and that means a lot because that was a focal point for great music to be happening, not just in New York City, but in all of America. And it should be said, this was not Carnegie Hall's idea, and they weren't trying to break ground by having an integrated concert, nor by having an emphasis on African-American music. Now, in 2023, you can go look at the schedule of Carnegie Hall, and there's a completely different, wide open and accepting attitude that black music can be great music, and it's great for all people, and anybody who buys a ticket can go to the show. That was a little bit of a harder sell in 1938, and there was no way that the Carnegie Hall presentations were going to come to this conclusion on their own. This is a rental of Carnegie Hall by the person who had the idea, John Hammond, piloting the notion and through all of 1938 trying to get backing for it, which did not come, interestingly, from some people you would expect might want to get behind the idea, but did finally come from the far-left periodical called the New Masses that was ready to bankroll it and said, let's do this, and they did. So the program reads, The New Masses presents an evening of American Negro music, quote, from spirituals to swing, close quote. Friday evening, December 23rd, 1938, at Carnegie Hall. That's what we're listening through right now, and through the great ideas and the extremely assiduous effort of this man, John Hammond, to pull together from across the nation talented black individuals performing on stage in a fashion that would outline for anybody, whether they were novice, new to it, or indoctrinated in the music already, some of the major trends of the then and the recent history of where black music had been and was going. Now, part of it was this next element. The set number 5 in the first concert was called Boogie Woogie Piano Playing. That's a very common phrase now. Maybe that doesn't mean as much in 2023, or it has been a common phrase such that it's not too surprising to folks. But that name was really not in wide circulation in 1938, and the style of boogie-woogie piano playing was kind of an insider thing. This is talking about a style of pianism that comes largely from the Southwest and the Midwest and has to do with eighth note activity, pumping out very insistent eight to the bar rhythm in the left hand, while improvising or crafting a melodic figure in the right hand. Boogie Woogie is arguably or easily understood to be a precursor of rock and roll, and the popularity of Boogie Woogie, you might say, was a precursor of the popularity that was going to descend upon R&B and rock and roll. So all through the late 1930s, this moment exactly, in other words, and unfolding for the next few years was this popularity for the boogie-woogie piano style. The people who made it popular were also some of the people who were the inventors of that methodology for playing music, or at least some who were the first to put it on record. One is called Mead Lux Lewis. Lux is his nickname, but he's always called by those three names, whose Chicago counterpart was a man called Albert Ammons. That is, they both played piano in Chicago. They had both showed up early in the late part of the 20s, so almost a decade earlier, at least a little bit on record, playing this style, along with a man called Pine Top Smith, who did not make this concert. And all of them put down some boogie-woogie examples that were rare collector's items by 1938. And it was even rarer to have any knowledge of where these people were because they largely were off the scene, not professional performers, not moving away from Chicago, and really taking jobs that were mostly not in music. So it was a bit of a trick and an effort for John Hammond to go to Chicago, find these people, and invite them to this concert series, which thankfully was buttressed by regular work in a recently opened club. In fact, it opened the same day as this concert, December 23rd of 1938, with a wide open race policy in southern Manhattan in Greenwich Village, a place called Cafe Society. So after this, you could hear Mead, Lux Lewis, and Albert Ammons at Cafe Society, but on this moment, they were reintroducing Boogie Woogie to these audiences, and it was big. We're going to hear Albert Ammons and Mead, Lux Lewis, and also Pete Johnson doing some of the things that they did often in these circumstances, and by that I mean making records together and also performing as a piano duo and even trio circumstances. Let's kick it off with the Jumpin' Blues, which involves Mead, Lux Lewis and Albert Ammons and Pete Johnson. Then the Honky Tonk Train Blues. Now, this is a signature item for Mead, Lux Lewis, and he plays it alone. He had recorded it almost 15 years earlier, Honky Tonk Train Blues. And again, the performer is Mead, Lux Lewis. After that, we'll hear a piece called Boogie Woogie that's Albert Ammons' chance to shine alone. And then we close it by bringing back together all three of the piano players and adding in the rhythm team from Count Basie's orchestra, Walter Page on bass and Joe Jones on drums. Since they were the bassist and drummer on stage, they were drafted in to support a bunch of people apart from what they usually did. A lot of boogie-woogie coming your way involving three different piano players, Albert Ammons, Mead, Lux Lewis, and Pete Johnson. And it's all on WICN Jazz Plus for New England, 90.5 FM. Thank you. We're listening to music from the concert called From Spirituals to Swing. In the beginning of 1939, there was only one event by that name. By the end of 39, there had been a second one. They both happened just before Christmas in those respective years. And for that matter, some of you might know well the 2LP recording that covers music from those early concerts, which is one of the sources for our listening tonight, or even the 2LP recording that documents a reprise concert that happened, I believe, in the late 60s or early 70s, which is, in a way, not to be confused with the material that we're dealing with tonight, but it's the same concert that reunion was reflecting on. Between now and midnight, we're listening to the recordings from Spirituals to Swing, both concerts in December of 1938 and 39. My name is Ben Young, and you're hearing us on WICN 90.5. You just heard five pieces of Boogie Woogie played by the Masters, who were at the top of their game and making the big splash in New York City that had waited quite a few years for their style of piano playing, and it was a big deal. The Jumpin' Blues was played by all three, Pete Johnson, Albert Ammons, and Mead Lux Lewis, on three pianos. One of them was actually an upright of exactly the sort, I think the company was called Wing, exactly the sort that Albert Ammons was used to playing. In other words, not really a high-class or high-grade, high-sounding instrument, but two other Steinways were brought in from the Carnegie Hall Wings so that three pianists could occupy each their own keyboard. Jumpin' Blues. Then, Mead Lux Lewis played a solo on Honky Tonk Train Blues. Then Albert Ammons played a solo on Boogie Woogie, and then Cavalcade of Boogie brings back all three piano players, plus Walter Page on bass and Joe Jones on drums. In the concert, as it originally flowed, this was the demarcation point for an intermission. So it was, and you're cordially invited to refill your water glass and settle back in for some great further music from the same concert. It gets very hot and heavy from now on. There are two sets to go on this first concert series. One of them was called Early New Orleans Jazz and brought to the stage one of the founding figures of the modern style of the 20s. In fact, of the teens for that matter, a very distinctive soprano sax and clarinet player from New Orleans called Sidney Bechet, B-E-C-H-E-T, who by this point had indoctrinated a group called the New Orleans Feet Warmers, and they had recorded under that name in 1932 with Bechet effectively as the leader. However, he was really sharing the front line with a trumpet man called Tommy Ladnier, who also came from the New Orleans area and was one of the consistent associates of Sidney Bechet. So in having Bechet represent the New Orleans jazz component, it was a real triumph of having somebody play on this stage who actually had helped to shape jazz music as a soloist's art. And you could say the same, I guess, about Tommy Ladnier. And for that matter, it was quite a triumph to get Tommy Ladnier here. We were remarking earlier that the series, the concert, the first concert, could not encompass Bessie Smith's performance because she had died more than a year before, and it was instead a memorial concert for her. And it could not bring in Robert Johnson, who was on the list and actually being pursued to be invited to the concert. Went to pick him up, and he had just died. Under the mysterious circumstances that people are still theorizing and philosophizing about, just ahead of when this concert happened in the end of 1938. But it could be possible, and it was possible, to bring Tommy Ladnier to the stage. It was not possible 6 months after this. Ladnier himself died just ahead of a June record date that might have had him on it, but he couldn't make it.